A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning. Thank you for spending this holiday weekend with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Chaleos, Tom Bettis with you this morning. We also have Sheridan Hansen with us. Sheridan is a horticulturist at the USU Botanical Center in Kaysville. We're taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Next listener, Ton, they're new to Richfield. They've always wanted a Rose of Sharon. Are they appropriate for Richfield? Are there other smaller flower trees that might be better?
I think they would be fine. I would just find one of the dwarf, like Lil' Kim or one of her relatives, that you can find at garden centers. They're usually marketed by proven winners, but they should be just fine.
Next listener is Steve. Steve is in Kaysville. Good morning, Steve. What is your question?
Hey, I have a question. I have I bought two trees in the fall of 2020. One was a northern catalpa, and the other one was a Princeton gold maple. And the Princeton gold is just not growing. It's leafing out fine, but it just hasn't grown over the last couple of years. The catalpa is finally this year growing. I have other maple trees that grow great. Do I just have to give it a little time to grow?
Well, Princeton gold is a yellow leaf variety that is slow growing. And is it scorching on you or just not growing?
The new tender leaves at the very end are scorching a little bit. But all things said, it looks pretty good, but those newer tender ones are scorching a little bit.
With it having the yellow foliage, that means it has less chlorophyll in there. Now, it's still generating energy using other mechanisms, but without that dark green color, it's naturally going to be slower to establish and slower to grow and more likely to scorch in our summer heat. And so all you can do is make sure you water it properly, try to get it established. And those kinds of trees sometimes are 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years, before you see a lot of progress with them because they're just slower growing.
I add? We have one at the USU Botanical Center in the Arboretum, and I think it was planted 4 or 5 years ago, and it just has not grown. They're a little bit more difficult tree, so kind of the pattern with them, I think.
Yeah, contrary to my usual nature, I was trying to be delicate, but it's not really a super adapted tree to our dry climate. They do a lot better in the Pacific Northwest where it's cooler and more humid.
Yeah, I bought it because I have two colorblind sons, and that's one color that they can see very well, so they love it. But looking at the, just doing a little research, it takes a while for them to grow. But I water, so when you say water properly, what I do is I deep water it, soak water about once a week or once every 10 days or so. And is that proper watering?
How long did you say it's been in the ground?
I planted it the fall of 2020.
Yeah, that's fine. That's excellent.
Okay. So just be patient.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
That's all I needed to know. Thank you.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. Our next listener says their plants and bushes have spider mites and they would like a friendly pesticide to get rid of them. Don't be snarky. That's
actually,
all I'm
the only
say.
Pesticides available to homeowners are friendly, actually. So
yeah.
No need for snark.
No need for snark. I mean, it is the season for spider mites right now. It's hot, it's dry, it's dusty, and those are the conditions that they absolutely love. I will say to be careful with insecticides or, chemicals on spider mites because you can get this rebound effect. So we have good spider mites and we have bad spider mites, basically. And the good ones are predatory and they will keep the bad ones kind of in check for the most part until they, they kind of boom. And when we put down a chemical, we can sometimes kill the good ones, and then the bad spider mites rebound much faster than the good ones do. And so then we don't have that natural balance in check. So just be careful as you apply things.
A stiff stream of water, that's JD's number one solution. Every morning go out and just spray it with a stiff stream of water to see if you can knock them off, watch the new growth. If that doesn't work after a week or so, then maybe a horticultural soap.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd spray that in the morning or evening every 3 to 5 days for a couple of weeks and then see what happens.
Okay. Next listener says they want to grow honeysuckle in a container. They want a large oblong metal trough to grow some in. Will that work?
Ooh, that's a really big plant to grow in a container.
If the trough were, you know, a couple feet wide, 2 or 3 feet wide and 6 feet long, yes.
Yeah.
If it were 2 feet by 2 feet long term, no.
Right. Yeah. So it you've got to remember that for what you get on the top growth, you're going to have just, you know, kind of matching underground growth. So think about how large that honeysuckle is going to get and really select your container based on that.
They've also done some hanging baskets, and they say goats. I'm not sure if that's a typo, that have gotten smaller. Can they use Miracle-Gro on them? Is that a term that I'm not familiar with, or is that a typo?
That's goats. A typo. That's
okay, so typo. I'm assuming, like, when it gets really hot that they stop blooming as much. Will Miracle-Gro actually help?
Maybe.
Possibly. It kind of depends on what goats really is.
I'm going to think blooms or something.
Yeah, blooms, something like that.
Oftentimes, soil can get depleted by late July, and additions of regular, like, liquid fertilizer, like Miracle-Gro or an infusion of Osmocote-type products will help. But if those plants go too long and get so rangy and yellow, sometimes you can't get them back. And so I would trim things back a bit, and sometimes deadheading will help, and just a light trim, and then I would hit it regularly with Miracle-Gro or apply Osmocote and give it 3 or 4 weeks and see if it rebounds.
Next listener is looking at planting a green vase Zelkova, but they're wary of the final size. Do they grow as large as the tag says in our climate? They live in East Mill Creek.
I would say that with Utah, when you look at the tags, I would expect probably about 75 to 80% of the growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Zelkova, the biggest ones I've ever seen have been about 40 tall and 30, 35 wide. Some of them can get a bit larger 50 years down the road. But, I mean, you'll look online at some of those and it'll say 70 or 80 feet. And that's not happening in Utah. I would say more of a 40 to 45 foot tree.
Yeah. Great selection for Utah, though.
Brian from Alpine says he put some non-dyed wood chips around his grow boxes. And he's getting 10 by 10-ish black or white piles or blotches of powdery substances. Looks like something spilled, but it didn't. Would that be?
I'm wondering if that's a slime mold, Ton. So we get this slime mold. It's not really a fungus, but we call it sometimes dog vomit fungus.
Ooh.
So it kind of looks like a dog threw up somewhere. But it is just what's called a slime mold. It's not harmful. It's just they're eating some of the organic matter, and it will dissipate actually pretty quickly.
Just scoop it up, throw it away.
Yeah.
And just a quick note. So when people text us, they get this reply, this automatic reply. If you reply to the automatic reply, we no longer see your text message. And Brian did this because he got the automatic reply, which is not what he wanted to see. And so then I had to look back several messages to actually see his question. Just a thought, the automatic reply is just thanking you, and we will get to your question as soon as we can.
Yes.
Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Thank you for listening to the KSL Greenhouse this morning on this holiday weekend. Maria, Ton, and Sheridan with you for this final segment. We'll get to as many of your calls and questions as we can. You can call us at 801-575-8255 or text us at 57500. Next listener says, help, squash bug spray.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
They've been intense.
They have been. If you are seeing dozens of them, it may be too late because the adult squash bugs are like tanks.
Yeah.
So if you did want to try a spray, the only thing that may be effective are going to be pretty harsh chemicals like pyrethroids. So like a Seven Garden spray or Pet Garden and Livestock. But you would only want to do it once because you will kill tons of beneficials with those kinds of sprays. And I mean, if it's a last ditch effort, I would say maybe. But you know, you really have to get on those squash bugs a month and a half ago.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when the populations are low, I think they're a lot easier to control. So it's, you know, you're just hand picking. I've got tape out there. I pull the eggs off of the leaves with tape. It's really easy to do. And then, you know, knowing that I started a month and a half ago, I'm just maintaining now. So every night I go out and I check, and it's like my crazy lady ritual.
One of our
in the garden.
Listeners, I don't know if they did a picture. They said they go out and look at night with a flashlight, and they put the flashlight under the leaves, and they can see the shadow wherever they have eggs.
Yeah.
And they'll do that. Ron Patterson, who's a former ag agent for USU, has a YouTube video really good on using water to get the adults.
Oh, yeah. That works really well. They come just piling out of the middle of those plants.
It's like they're down there having whatever kind of party squash bugs do.
Okay, you guys
are
getting my ick look like a number of times here. You pick the
She's
eggs
like, no,
off.
No, no.
Yeah, they're having their squash bug party under the stems of the plant. Mm-hmm. You fill that up with water and the gig is up, and they race up the stems, and then you can pick them off and throw them in a bucket of soapy water.
Or squish them.
Squish them, yes.
Yeah.
This may be more information than I need to know.
Was it JD who was telling me you know somebody with a salt, some sort of salt gun? You put table salt in it, and it uses air pressure to kill stuff.
Are there groups that advocate for squash bugs?
No,
I don't
want to
hear from them if there are.
If there are, I'll go out on a limb and say I oppose you.
They do destroy the plants, don't they?
Yes.
Okay. Next listener says they planted 6 Armstrong maples 2 years ago. They live on the bench. Some of the smaller twigs at the top are dead with no leaves. Should they cut them off or wait?
I would cut them off instead of waiting. If it's dead, you can prune any time. Armstrong's a type of red maple, Acer rubrum. And you're probably going to need to supplement them with iron occasionally in the spring. They're like Miller Ferrer Plus to keep them going.
Yeah.
We had been talking earlier about different types of oregano and how many different varieties there are out there. And Sheridan and I got into this conversation about how some are just beautiful, just as landscape, beautiful landscape plants. And you found a few that were great that we wanted to talk about.
Yeah, so we were talking about that cascading type that kind of, you know, you would put over a rock wall or a rock garden kind of thing. Cascading hop flower oregano is what it's called. You can pick it up. It's actually out of stock right now, but High Country Gardens carries it. I'm sure a number of our local nurseries carry it, but that one is beautiful. So that's the one that has those blooms that kind of dry out. They look kind of like a hop flower, but they kind of have that gradient from green to pink and purple, and they're just gorgeous.
And plus, don't they smell good?
They do smell good, and they're a good pollinator plant. I see just multitudes of pollinators on them, so, you know.
Originally, when I started putting in my yard, the herbs were in the herb garden, and that's it, right? Mm-hmm. But you're really missing out if you only put them in an herb garden.
I think you are, because not only are they edible, but they have other functions as well. And most of the herbs that you would plant for edible herbs, if you'll let them go to flower, are incredible pollinator plants. So you get,
plus I ran out of space. Well, so I had to reach, you know, I had to branch out.
You just kind of keep rambling away from where you started. That's how my gardens work anyway. I just keep moving outward.
Plus, you have another variety that is incredible as a cut flower.
Right. So this one we have in our cut flower gardens, and I'm probably going to say it wrong, but it's Rotkugel. It's beautiful. It produces this incredibly bright, purple bloom on a very long stem. So every time I harvest it, we harvest our cut flowers at the USU Botanical Center, and I donate them to a group called Brightening Blooms. They have volunteers that come in, they arrange them, and then they send them out to long-term care facilities, hospice facilities, places like that, for people to have something beautiful to look at. And every time I send out this Rotkugel ornamental oregano, it gets so many comments, and I get people coming back saying, what was that that you sent us? Not only was it beautiful, but it smelled amazing, and it added this incredible texture to our arrangement. So, you know, multiple use there. So, yeah, you can really have some fun with the oreganos.
Is that one that's locally available?
Yes. So that one I think you could find in our local nurseries, as well as High Country Gardens carries that one as well.
Okay. Yeah. High Country Gardens, where are they?
So they're an online presence, so uh-huh. But we do have their warehouses here in Utah. So they, in a sense, are local that way. So they distribute from Clearfield.
Are they based out of New Mexico?
I thought they were based on the East Coast, but okay. I could be very wrong. But they do specialize in, drought-tolerant plants that are well adapted for Utah. So some of their selections are really great. So you can go in there, you can get some great ideas, and then go search our local nurseries for the same kind of plants, because they do supply to our local nurseries as well.
Have you found any interesting drought-tolerant plants this year that you hadn't seen in the past, or some that people just aren't that familiar with that you think they should know about?
Yeah, we were talking about that. It's not really drought-tolerant, but Kiss Me Over the Garden Gate.
Right, yeah, we were talking about that one. We were saying
it's a tall,
beautiful.
It gets 6 to 8 feet tall.
Pink flowers.
Yeah,
pink
look
blossoms.
A little bit like fuchsia, or maybe the Bleeding Heart.
Yeah, a little bit like a Bleeding Heart, and it was a favorite of Thomas Jefferson, which I didn't know. So that's kind of a little
piece of
history.
Yeah, that one, its seeds are available and it's easy to grow, but you don't see it hardly at all for a retail sale.
Right. Yeah, that one's beautiful, interesting, and the bloom is just so bright. So
it's one you would put in a larger flower bed and behind things, and put lower things in front of it, because it gets so tall. It's a good anchor plant to have smaller things in front of it.
Mm-hmm. Is this what kind of exposure, sun exposure?
Full sun. At least 6 hours of sun. It'll do east okay, but full sun to at least 6 hours a day.
It seems like there are many more full sun plants than shade tolerant plants. Is that just my perspective, or?
Well, anything that blooms typically needs a little more sunlight, typically. There are a lot of shade plants. Some of them, you know, we don't really dive into. We're in such a high light environment in Utah that, you know, our focus
is, we live in a desert.
Yeah, our focus is really sun. So we do deal with sun plants a lot more than we do with shade plants.
Yeah, it just seems like I know my neighbors who have more shadier yards. Their plants seem to just do so much better because they're escaping that heat.
Yeah. Yeah. I think both of us have go-to shade plants.
We do.
You know, one for me is fall anemone. Just plant them, water them, and after a couple of years, they last for a long time and give you blossoms from August till late September. You know, and there's a number of them like that. Do you have any favorite shade?
Oh, you know what? I could go into this deep rabbit hole of just hostas. I love hostas. All the different colors,
beautiful?
And the leaf shape and the variegations. And, you know, I could spend a lot of time there. And I do love hydrangeas. So even though they're not the best adapted plant for Utah.
Well, the oak leaf is very shade tolerant. And even the other ones are more shade tolerant than given credit.
Yeah, I love that oak leaf. I have it on the north side of my house right as you walk up to my front door. And it just lines the whole side of my house, and it's beautiful.
By the way, High Country Gardens is in Colorado.
Colorado, thank you very much.
Somebody wanted to help us out.
Thank you for helping us. Yeah.
Which made me forget my next... Oh, I was going to tell you that where I had to take down that big pine tree, that's where I have a lot of hostas, and now I'm worried that my poor hostas are really going to suffer without the shade that they were experiencing.
They can be moved quite easily. You can actually move them multiple times during multiple periods. And one
off.
Of them, we don't really think about
it. I'm going to plant another
time
tree. That's what I'm going to do.
You do your iris, you can move your hostas then too. Or you can move them late fall or early spring.
Okay, so I shouldn't be panicking too much. That's where the hydrangea is. That's where my hostas are. And I don't know why the rose bushes, they just seem to do well wherever I put them.
You know what? Roses are surprisingly tough. People don't think of them as tough, but they're really drought tolerant. Once they're established, they do well with little water. They can handle some of the heat.
A long time ago, I lived in a home my parents bought that somebody landscaped and didn't know what they were doing. They put a rose garden on the north side of the house.
Ooh.
And the roses did really well considering it was shade. And they're just adaptable plants.
They are. They're tougher than we give them credit for.
And also very thorny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know they had Peace and Mr. Lincoln back there, along, I think, with Chrysler Imperial. All these, anyway, they bloomed a few weeks later, but they bloomed like mad.
Well, back in the old days, if you had a manor, you had to have a rose garden.
Oh, yeah. You want that scent.
I mean, just like the White House, we hear about the president out in the rose garden.
Out in the rose garden. Well, and it's kind of that we've made it the epitome of plants. Roses are that perfection that everybody kind of seeks in the garden. So, you know, the White House, you would want to have a
absolutely
rose garden.
Absolutely have to have the right? rose garden. Well, Sheridan, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been fun to have you here.
Thanks so much for having me. I've had a great time with both of you this morning, and I hope we answered a lot of questions.
Answered a lot of questions. We're going to come up and see you on Friday
yes.
and take a look at the edible garden. Again, tell people where the USU Botanical Center is so they can come see the edible
yes,
garden.
Yes, it is open to the public. You can come. You can walk around the grounds. There's 100 acres of gardens, including an arboretum, the edible garden, the urban farm garden, a pollinator garden. So 80 East, 725 South in Kaysville. It's open from dawn to dusk, 7 days a week, and you're welcome to stop by.
Have a great holiday weekend, both of you.
You too.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.